Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Phidias Club. This is episode 76. We are in October 2016, and it's a special. We're having a conversation with a conservative Christian. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phidias Club. This is a special episode. We do those from time to time. It's usually a one-on-one with someone that I think is interesting to the rest of the world because they are in a situation that maybe other people, other cultures don't encounter as much. We've done some about living in Saudi Arabia. We've done some about being a very far-left activist almost in France. So we try to sort of explore other types of cultures in these specials. And usually, for those who don't know the show, what we do is that we get people from different cultures, backgrounds, countries together and discuss the news from around the world. These specials are a little bit different. And I don't think I mentioned my name. I should probably do that. I'm Patrick Beja. I'm the host of the show. And so today I'm welcoming to the show Tony Staley. Is that, I hope I'm not butchering your name.
That's absolutely correct.
Excellent. Thank you, Tony, for being on the show. Just to jump right into it, you are a self-defined conservative Christian, right?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. So that is what we're going to be exploring today, what it means to be a conservative Christian, and maybe with a sort of light shining on your online activities and maybe some of the challenges that you find there. But I think we're going to talk about a little bit of your what it means to you to be a conservative Christian as well in the beginning of the show. This is something that might not be a huge surprise to people from the US, but I'm sure that people from outside the US are going to be interested in hearing directly from someone who lives through this every day and not through maybe some, fantasized recountings that they've heard from someone who's heard it from someone. And as usual, what I'd like to remind people when we do this these special, it's that I really want the Phidias Club to be a place where we are listening and not a place where we're necessarily arguing. I mean, it doesn't mean that I won't maybe ask questions or wonder about some things, but there are plenty of places in media where you're going to try to have people convince other people of many things. And that's great. It's good that it exists. But what lacks, I believe, is a place just to listen to people who think differently, maybe, or maybe who think like you. But just listening is important and trying to maybe not agree, but at least understand with people. So again, I want to extend my thanks to you, Tony, for being on the show. I'm sure this is not an easy step for you because I don't believe you are a very, media savvy person. You're putting yourself out there a little bit here. So thank you very much for being on. And I guess my first question, let's dive into it, is going to be for you, if you could define yourself and explain who you are, where you're from, so that people have a sense of who you are as an introduction.
Sure. I am, like you said, I'm from the United States, from southeastern Ohio. I live right on the river, the Ohio River, between Ohio and West Virginia. It's a rural community. We have some towns, but not much in the way of big cities. I had mentioned previously that I'm a banker. I'm a white Christian banker, so as far as conservatism, that's like the poster child, I suppose. But I've lived in this area all my life. I've been a Christian all my life. You know, my parents were Christians. They were actually Catholic, and I went to Catholic church every Sunday as a boy. And then when I got into high school, I actually went to a Christian high school, a private Christian high school. And somehow, while I was going to school there, I kind of fell away from the church, which is, I suppose, a little ironic, but.
So
after, go ahead.
When you say you fell away from the church, how would you define that? Do you mean you didn't go to church every Sunday, or did you distance yourself from your faith? Even
I wouldn't say that I distanced myself from the faith. I still identified as a Christian. I still, of course, believed in God. I just, you're correct. I did not go to church, and it wasn't just not going every Sunday. It was a block of a few years that I never went. And then I started acting in ways that would not epitomize Christianity very much. This was during late high school and college, so I got into a little bit of the party scene in college. Comparatively with some other people that I ran with, it wasn't quite as bad, but...
So we're not talking about, like, drugs and dealers and anything like that, right?
No,
it's just partying a little bit too hard.
Yeah, partying a little too hard, okay. Too much in the way of dating and... I don't want to say dating because that makes me sound a little bit like a prude, but you understand what I'm talking about.
Well, casual encounters and
yes.
Right. So wait, maybe I'm getting into, and if I'm stepping out of bounds, just let me know. Did you have premarital sex?
I did.
Oh my God. So, you know, already that's interesting here because I think this is kind of, you know, I'm touching on the fantasized vision that we have of conservative Christians here. It for some of us, I'm sure, and I'm sure for some of the conservative Christians, premarital sex is a big deal. How big of a deal was it for you and for your community, your family, that you strayed from the you know, Christianity, your brand of Christianity that much? Was it a problem, or?
You know, it really, I'm sure, like my mother, for example, I'm sure she didn't love the fact that I wasn't going to church, although she was kind of in and out at the time as well, which may have contributed a little bit to why I was. But as far as my actions, you know, we don't talk about it too much, especially at that time. It was, you know, there are a lot of people that probably don't know that about me. They may not have any inclination one direction or the other, but I certainly didn't go to people and say, hey, I just want to let you know that I had premarital sex. So
right. That sounds like a normal way of approaching it.
Right.
I also, you know, already something that brings us close together. I also don't go to people and tell them, hey, by the way, I wanted you to know.
That's probably a good idea.
All right. Okay. So, but it's not like, you know, you would have had a fight with your parents if you know, they had realized that you were, sorry to be fixating on the premarital sex thing, but, you know, it's kind of one example of things that might seem like a big deal. It's not like they would have had a fight or they would have told you, what are you doing, Tony? You're throwing your life away. It wouldn't be that huge a deal.
My parents, no. There are certainly some parents that it would have been a very big ordeal. So there are varying degrees of... I don't want to say strictness because there are rules, you know, there are rules that we follow, but there are varying degrees of how well people follow those rules, to be honest. Okay.
All right. Okay. So let's move on. The wild Tony years in college. And after that, you mentioned you came back to your faith or to Christianity when you met your wife, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she she has always been very strong in her Christian faith, and she didn't kind of go through those dry years like I did. So when I met her, it was important for her that I go to church with her and be in the same place that she was as far as Christian faith. And so, to be completely honest, I did what she asked because I wanted to date her. But that led me to actually becoming closer to God and more involved with my faith. And it was definitely a good thing. It was a life-changing thing that happened probably for the wrong reason. But, you know, things happen for different reasons, and it's the, result that counts.
It seems like a pretty good reason to me, you know, being in love with your wife and wanting to, you know, be closer to her and wanting to be with her, I think is I would say probably one of the best reasons to go back to what you knew. So I think that's kind of beautiful. So, all right. So how would you now define your everyday life as a Christian? You know, what do you do? What do you not do? Maybe some details for people who are not familiar with what that is.
Sure. I attend a church, that is, I'm not sure how much the rest of the world knows about our terminology, but it would be called a Pentecostal or full gospel church, which there are different denominations in Christianity. You know, you've got your Baptists, your Methodists, and your Catholics, and so forth. My church is kind of not a denomination. It's just we believe what the Bible says, and we believe the entirety of what the Bible says, and that's kind of how we base our faith. I go so three times a week. Okay, go ahead.
How, when you say we believe the entirety of what the Bible says, how literal is your interpretation of the Bible?
That is a good question. How literal is it? So can you give me an example of what you're
sure.
thinking?
I mean, you know, there are questions about the first one that comes to mind is about homosexuality. Okay. And the premarital sex, I'm sure, is another one. Do you take the what's written in the Bible? I mean, you can go very far. Like, do you believe that the earth is 5,000 years old, for example? Or do you believe that these kinds of things, you know, the things that are serious points of contention with basic science, but that some Christians still believe in?
Sure. The first question that you had about homosexuality and premarital sex, I believe that the Bible says that those are wrong, so I consider them wrong. Both of them. I don't pick and choose one over the other. As far as the age of the earth, I am willing to admit that I don't necessarily have all the answers. I believe that if the Bible said, I believe the Bible, and the Bible says that the age of the earth is 5,000 years old, I believe that's what it is. Now, I understand that science says that it is much older than that, and I don't have an explanation for that. I've seen videos where biased scientists, and I'm saying Christian biased scientists, claim that the age of the earth that non-Christian biased scientists say is wrong. Of course, I've seen the evidence that it's correct. I've seen both. So I think that for me, I just have to believe what the Bible says and just go on faith, which is belief in things unseen. So, like I said, we actually just showed a video at my church. It wasn't the whole video. It was an excerpt from the video, and then they recommended that we go watch the whole thing. It was basically saying that the earth wasn't as old as everyone says it was, and that the scientific methods for proving the age of the earth were flawed. And I've seen that before. Of course, I'm willing to admit that in this age of the internet, that I can't always believe everything I read, especially on the internet. So it is difficult for me to come to terms with the scientific community saying one thing and my faith saying something else. That is, that is definitely a struggle. But at the same time, I'm naturally skeptical, which doesn't always, that's that perfect Christianity thing. I believe God wants us to look at things and think about things and figure things out, but I'm very skeptical. That's just my personality. So that comes in. Go ahead.
Oh, please keep, I mean, finish your thought.
Okay. Well, that goes in both ways. You know, I look at things in the Bible and I really analyze them and I take a close look at them, but also I think about, you know, science and a computer saying this thing is happening. Well, I'm aware that someone programmed that computer, and you can program a computer to say what you want it to say. And I'm not saying that someone thought to themselves, I'm going to program this computer to say wrong things. But if the assumptions that that person had when they initially programmed the program were incorrect, then that program is going to be incorrect.
Okay. So I think it's fair to say you're a little bit conflicted about this, just at least a little bit.
Yes.
And we could go into this debate, and I have very strong opinion about opinions about, you know, the conflict between science and faith, especially in this regard of the age of the Earth. I think I took it as an example in a blog post a while ago, and I was sort of, you know, basically, my point was science is very proven to be useful in many cases. So people who don't believe that that the Earth is older than 5,000 years should forfeit their right to use an iPhone, because science made the iPhone, you know, and you can't choose which one you want to use and which one you don't want to use. But so that was my way of sort of jokingly say, it's not, you can't, you know, science works, so you can't decide it works for you for your iPhone and then throw it away for other things. But I think that could become the topic of an entirely different debate, and I don't want to focus on that too much. So let's move on from that and continue with... you mentioned when we were talking before the show, and I think once now, this goal of being a perfect Christian. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? What does it mean for you to be a perfect Christian?
Well, I suppose a perfect Christian would be someone that never commits a sin at all and shares their Christianity with everyone in a loving way and brings many souls to Christ, which that's the goal. You know, as a Christian, we believe that if you don't accept Jesus, then you'll eventually go to hell, and that's a horrible thing. And then that's our goal, to bring people in, because we don't want that to happen. But when I mentioned it before the show, I said one of my flaws is I don't share probably as much as I should, and I pointed out that I am on this show sharing, which is a bigger step than a lot of people take, but right, just in my daily life. And I think that's probably where my biggest flaw is. I don't incorporate it enough into my everyday life. I do incorporate it into my everyday life, but there's always an extra step that I could go. And I think that's probably true with anyone. I don't think there's any perfect Christian except for Jesus. He was the perfect Christian. Everyone else falls short. Okay. And I'm no different from everyone else.
Mm, I see. So actually, there's another question I wanted to ask you. It was to define your... So you said it wasn't quite a denomination, a full gospel church. What does it mean exactly for the nature of the church, for these kinds of churches?
Well, our church is quite an experience. And I think what most of your Christians, especially your American Christians, are going to they're going to know exactly what I'm talking about when I say full gospel Pentecostal type church is they think we're a little crazy. We're the ones that raise our hands, dance around. We believe in speaking in tongues. And
what does that mean, speaking in tongues?
So that is a biblical principle. On the day of the Pentecost, the disciples had flames, little flames over their head, and they spoke in languages that they didn't understand. Okay. And all the people thought that they were drunk. And they said, these are not drunk. They're speaking in tongues. So what that essentially means is you're speaking in a language you don't understand. It's there's two types. The one type is a corporate tongue where one person can say something in a language and then another person interprets what they said. And the belief is that they're speaking God's word to the people. And then the other type is a personal type where you are praying in a tongue, and that is a prayer between you and God, and it's so personal between you and God that you don't even know what you're saying.
And that's what you do. You mentioned you go to church three times a week, and during Mass, this happens at some point during the
It does sometimes. It's not a regimented, like, okay, it's 9:30, it's time for tongues. It's not like that. It's considered a move of the Holy Spirit, and when the Holy Spirit decides it's time to do it, we do it. So sometimes there's weeks go by, it doesn't happen. And then there's sometimes that it happens a few services in a row. Like I said, a lot of your other denominational Christians are going to think that I'm a crazy person right now, but that's, you know, it is in the Bible and it's what we believe. So yeah, I'm perfectly proud to talk about it.
Yeah. And, you know, I really don't think it might sound funny, but I really don't want this to be a judgment space. I really want to hear what you have to say. And as I said, there are many, many places for people to be judgmental about many things. And of course, there are a few things I would not, you know, admit on the show and I would call people out for. But those are a few things. And I don't think we've, that's not what this is. So I'm very happy to hear what you have to say, because I think too many times for these kinds of things, as I mentioned, or other things, we just don't listen and think, oh, this is a crazy person, and don't even listen. So, and I think it's very important that we listen to each other a little bit more, even if we disagree, as we said. I've said it many times. Anyway, let's keep going. Tony, so you were talking about what it means to be a perfect Christian.
Yeah, I'm not one, and I will admit that to anyone that asks. And like I said, I don't think there is one. And that's why I think that's a misconception that a lot of people have. And I could be wrong, but you'll see online, and I know we were going to talk a little bit about my experiences online. You'll see online people talking about how, you know, judging other people, well, you can't judge because you're not perfect. Well, we know that. And I don't necessarily think that it's my job to judge somebody. It is more my place to inform people of how I believe things are. If they're interested in listening to me, and if they, so I'm not here to say you're going to hell or you are doing evil things. I'm here to say, if you want to know what I believe and what that means, I'll tell you. And these are the facts of what I believe. And I think that's where it gets a little skewed sometimes.
So let's take a practical example. You talk about sharing your faith. You've mentioned this a couple of times. Let's say you and I are, you know, having a beer or a cup of coffee, and I'm telling you about something that you think is going to, you know, is a sin and is going to get me closer to going to hell after I die, which obviously is not a pleasant experience. Let's say I'm, you know, talking about, I don't know, something, I don't want to say something horrible, but something mild that is still a sin. Maybe you can help me out there. Give me an example of something like that. That wouldn't be premarital sex. It seems it's the only one I can think about.
Well, yeah, lying is a okay. sin. And you, I suppose if you were telling me that you, about this elaborate lie you told somebody, and mm-hmm. you know, we're concocting
that I
this
was
fictional
lying to
tale.
My wife, for example. Yeah, let's say sure. you know, I'm lying to my wife or lying to my cousin or whatever, and I'm telling you, you know, I told him this, but it's not true, blah blah blah. So how would you react at that point if you were really trying to be consistent with your faith?
If I was trying to be consistent with my faith, I would probably tell you that. Well, I guess the first question is: are you in this fictional conversation, are you a Christian?
Nope. It's I'm a horrible atheist.
Okay. So, Mr. Horrible Atheist, I would probably tell you that, well, first of all, lying is kind of wrong anyway, right? I mean, lying is unethical. And so I don't think me saying, listen, Patrick, or lying to your wife, that's probably not cool, would come as a surprise to anyone, whether I'm a Christian or not. But as far as the Christianity aspect, my goal would be to let you know in a way that isn't overbearing that I am a Christian, and then tell you that, you know, according to my Christian faith, lying is a sin, which, as we said, it's wrong either way. So maybe this isn't the best example.
Yeah, but, right. Maybe we have to go back to the example of the premarital sex, because this is obviously, if we take an example that everyone, you know, is sort of a socially agreed upon, morally wrong thing to do, obviously it's not going to be very, the reaction is not going to be very different.
Sure. So let's use premarital sex, for example.
Right. Yay! Let's go back to that.
You're not married anymore, or I suppose you could be married and having an adulterous affair. You know, I would, if I'm doing what I should be doing, first of all, what I should be doing is sharing my Christianity with you, whether or not you've told me that you're sinning or not. I actually fall under a little bit of a different camp than a lot of Christians, and that is that I don't necessarily see it as my job to stand on the rooftop and proclaim the sin of everybody that's walking by. Mm-hmm. And I think there, another misconception is all Christians are like that. That's not the majority of Christians. The majority of Christians are not like that. But my thought process is, I don't believe it's my job to get a non-Christian sinner to stop sinning. Why would they? Especially if it's something that's considered socially acceptable, for like premarital sex, for example. Mm-hmm. There's no reason for them to stop their sin just because I say it's a sin if they're not a Christian. So my job is to share my Christianity with you, and that is something that I need to work on, as I said earlier.
Mm-hmm. But how would that take place? Like, do you tell me, hey, you know, I'm a Christian and I get a lot of comfort from my faith, and I, you know, I feel like a more accomplished person, and maybe that could help you too? Or is that the kind of that's how I imagine someone that's reasonable and that wants to share their faith would do it? But I have no idea how it actually happens.
Sounds like a great way. I'll have to use that one.
Well,
like I said, this is not my strong suit. It really isn't.
So you personally would probably not talk about it too much. You might say, hey, you know, that's probably
the case.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. That's you know, that's really interesting to know as well, because I want to move forward with a topic that is, I think, very dear to you, which is your interactions online and the difficulties you face there. And defining who you are is really interesting as it by itself, but also a way of understanding how and why you are facing these difficulties and how you can, you know, why you're finding them to be difficulties. So you are a geek as well as a Christian, right? You're
yes.
a gamer, you're...
Yeah, I'm very into gaming. Well, Blizzard gaming, which is where I discovered you. Yeah, I mean, I play Heroes of the Storm, Hearthstone. Used to play World of Warcraft, so very into Blizzard gaming. So I follow, and I'm very into Twitter. So I follow a lot of people. I follow you and some people that you're very familiar with online on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I'm also I said I was a banker. I actually do new technology development for my bank. Now, that doesn't mean I'm a programmer. We're a small community bank, and that might be a hard one for you to grasp, because I believe the European banks are all a lot bigger than some of our community banks here in the United States. But my bank that I work for is a just under $1 billion asset size bank. We have 19 branches, so we don't do internal development. We don't develop our own systems and our own softwares. So we outsource all of that. And my job, one of my jobs at the bank, is to go and find those technologies that we need to use, such as mobile banking and the ability to take a picture with your phone to make a deposit. So I follow those people online too. And especially the gaming community and that new financial technology communities, they're very liberal leaning. So I see anti-Christian sentiment, and because it's the internet, because of that anonymity of the internet, it just gets really nasty. And as a Christian, and I take my Christianity seriously, I've admitted that I could do a lot better job, but I do take it seriously, and I associate myself very deeply with Christianity. So when I see people, it's one thing to disagree, and I respect the opinion of someone that disagrees with me. I may not agree with it, of course, otherwise it wouldn't be a disagreement, but I respect that they have that opinion. But the level of meanness, and that makes me maybe sound a little sensitive and childlike, but they're so mean out there. And I can't read comments.
People are mean on the internet is kind of a, you know, now is becoming more and more commonplace knowledge. But can you give us a couple of concrete examples of how you are faced with maybe solicited, maybe unsolicited reactions that you know, unsettle you a little bit, as you said?
Well, for the most part, it's rarely directed at me individually. It's usually directed just off into the internet, kind of a shotgun style effect of I'm going to hit whoever I can hit. And I was just saying, I can't read comments, because it seems like any story on any topic eventually turns into a comment war between Christians and non-Christians. And we were talking about science versus faith earlier, and I do want to be clear. I believe science. it doesn't always coincide with what my faith says.
If you don't actually believe in, you know, the age of the earth thing, that's sort of a basic conclusion of science. It's sort of like, yes, it's not 1 + 1 = 2, but it's sort of the basic foundations of a lot of the scientific method and scientific process. So I would dispute the idea that you do believe in oh, it's not even, you know, I have a problem when people say I believe in science. But I would say that you don't. But you think you say you do?
Well, I believe that I believe in gravity. Yeah, I believe Right. I took science classes at my Christian school, and they taught me principles of science. Your example of the age of the Earth was actually a very good example for me in particular, because I will out myself a little bit here, and I already said I'm not sure. It's tough for me. Some people take the Bible literally and say it's 5,000 years. I thought it was six, but maybe it's five.
Six something. I'm sorry. I'm a little behind on my Old Testament reading.
Well, there you go. See? No. But I have had this discussion with my wife before. Is it a literal? Well, and there are many people who say the days that are mentioned in Genesis are actually 1,000 years. And there's other places in the Bible that kind of, I won't say back that up, but they give credence to that theory. But then you're still talking a relatively short amount of time.
Right.
So do I know that the Bible, the years in the Bible are literal years? Do I know that there wasn't millions of years of time between those days? I don't. And again, that is something that I struggle with. But in the end, I have to believe. And at the same time, just to deflect a little bit.
Yeah, let's not get hung up on the age of the Earth thing. I don't think this is the main.
Well, I don't think that is necessarily like if I believed that the Earth was, how many years is the Earth according to the scientific community?
25 million.
If I believe that.
Is it? I'm going to out myself as an idiot now.
But if I believe that, but I believe the rest of the Bible, I believe Jesus came to the Earth, died for my sins, all that. I believe I'm going to go to heaven, even if I believe the age of the Earth is whatever. And maybe the passages in Genesis are not literal.
Right. Days. So it's not like if you don't believe the Earth is 5,000 years old, all of a sudden at the gates of heaven, it's like, nope, you take the downstairs elevator. It's not that matters.
Exactly.
Right?
That's okay. Exactly right. Now, I understand where some people might struggle with if you don't believe that, why do you believe the rest of the Bible? Well, I know there's a lot of things in the Bible that I don't understand. And it might be a translation thing. It might be a metaphorical thing. I don't know. But anyway.
Okay. So let's go back to the comments thing. And you know, I was asking for a couple of examples and you said you can't read the comments.
Sure.
And I think it goes to the way, you know, the way it, you understand people disagreeing with you, but the way it impacts you is beyond people disagreeing. So, yeah, go ahead.
And I understand the internet is mean. I actually get a little more aggressive when I'm on the internet. But to me, the level of derision directed towards people is out of control. And I mentioned this in some of our correspondence prior to the show. I see terms like space daddy, and I see Christian belief referred to as mythological monsters and things like that. And to me, that just seems really crazy. First of all, I don't agree with other religions, but I don't mock those religions. Right. I don't. And I think that's what it comes down to. I don't agree with people that are atheists, but I don't mock them for being an atheist. Christians more and more are being mocked for our beliefs. And I know that there are other religions, but you don't see it as much. And maybe it's because Christians are a little more vocal on the internet and they're judgments, and I'm doing the finger quotes that you can't see, but that could be it. Maybe it's because people just feel like they need to fight back against us because we're always in their faces. But I was discussing this with my wife the other day when we were talking about what I was going to talk about on this show, and it's just mockery. It's horrible. You're mocking the person's faith. You're mocking their core of their being in some cases. And if I could get one message out to people that are doing that, it'd be like that. Can we tail that off a little bit? Because that is just it's a horrible feeling when someone mocks who you are.
That's really interesting, and it's not exactly where I thought you were. We were going to go with this discussion, but you put your finger right on it. It's the anonymity, and you know all of these problems that we are facing on the internet all the time. It doesn't matter if you're a Christian or something else. The fact that you're a Christian, and you know what I would say is that in the Western world, Christianity is more dominant, and it's it's obviously the biggest monotheistic religion in the Western world. So it still hurts when you're being mocked in that way. It's not because it's the biggest one that it doesn't hurt you, right?
Right.
But I'm also wondering, in this case, you're saying, you know, it's happening more and more, and we feel, I don't think you said it quite like that, but it seems like you feel you're being targeted almost. Christianity is being targeted specifically. I'm wondering,
I do believe that, and I think you may have actually come across the reason for it. We're the biggest. We're the easiest target.
Hmm. It's, yeah, maybe, I guess so, but it's also, what about Islam, though? I'm taking the example of the other huge monotheistic religion, which is also in a big, in a big controversy at the moment around the world because of the terrorism attacks. Do you feel... the reason I'm saying this is that, you know, you're saying Christianity is always being targeted, and it's almost felt like you were saying we're the only ones being treated that way. Maybe that's a mischaracterization, but I'm wondering what you think about the other religions, and the first one that comes to mind is Islam.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that I absolutely think they're being targeted, and hateful things are being said about them as well. I think there are some differences, and I think they're being targeted for one specific reason, which you mentioned was the
Terrorism,
act of terrorism. I think we're being targeted for a completely different reason, which, you know, you're not seeing Christian acts of terrorism, so there's a different reason. Now, I don't think mockery is okay in either instance, but I will also say that I don't think, at least in America, I'm not seeing them being mocked for their religion. I'm seeing them being criticized for the actions of those few people.
Right. I guess there is, a difference.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Yeah, that launches us into a wider even discussion that I'm not sure I want to get into right here. But the fact that you feel you're being targeted, and I think, you know, if I'm being completely honest, as I mentioned, I am an atheist, and there is definitely a feeling for me when people talk about their religion, or, you know, people who are very Christian, it's difficult for me to reconcile the way I look at the world and the way they look at the world. When you're saying, the space daddy comment seems to be especially hurtful to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine someone that doesn't believe in God? you, I'm sure, you know, you've had this argument with many people, I'm certain, and I apologize if I'm, you know, making you repeat things you've said many times, but the idea of God itself is very incongruous to someone who doesn't believe in it, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So, referring to God as Space Daddy, I'm trying to put, it's interesting because you're making me sort of question the way I look at religion and Christianity by your comments about other people that question it in a less than courteous way. So I'm trying to put my words together as I'm thinking. I apologize if I'm coming off as a little bit incoherent. But there is a dominance of Christianity, and I've had examples of people, American friends of mine, that have been telling me that in the US today, maybe a few years ago, and even today, I'm sure, it is very difficult for them to tell some of the members of their community, their family, that they are maybe not atheists, but they don't believe in God the way they do. Or maybe some of them are atheists. And they're telling me, you know, I can't say that. I can't say it because I would be shunned. I would be outcast. It would be a real problem. And when you're in that kind of environment, I would say that I am not incredibly surprised that these kinds of conflicts occur. In France, that's the example I know the most. I've often mentioned that religion is not as big a deal as it is in other countries, maybe especially in the US, but it's the case everywhere. And we don't have the same kinds of issues. So when I look at the US and my friends who tell me, you know, I can't say it to my parents, let's say without excusing it, it sort of explains to me why some people are being even aggressive in their atheism or lack of Christianity. So I guess the question I would like to ask you is, how would you or maybe your community react if let's say, you know, nightmare scenario, one of your children is grown up, they go to college and they come back and tell you, Dad, I love you very much, but you know what? I'm sorry, I don't believe in God anymore. Would that, you know, what kind of reaction would that elicit?
Well, that would be heartbreaking, first of all, because of what I believe. And we've right. discussed
you
what
believe
I believe
at that point that they would go to hell, which
yes, yeah. And mm. that's obviously not something you would ever want for your child.
Clearly, yeah.
And it's definitely, I understand the difficulty there of kind of explaining that perspective to somebody that just doesn't believe that. But I would, of course, still love my son. And I would treat him as my son or my daughter, whichever one it would be. But it would be tough. And I wouldn't enrage at them. I wouldn't, you know, shun them. But I would absolutely make it a point for me to try to bring them back because I wouldn't want that final result for them.
Which makes sense, of course. I'm wondering how, you know, and as you're speaking, I'm sort of, I'm touched a little bit because I can almost feel the pain in your voice as you're imagining that situation. And I certainly don't wish that for anyone, but I'm wondering how your community would react to someone like that. Like you did mention it's a rural area and it's I'm imagining that the community is mostly Christian. Is everyone in your environment of your faith?
Not everyone. It is very dominantly Christian. Yes.
Okay.
But
so
well, I know people I work with people that are atheists, and I know they are. I don't know how many other people know they are. Now, I don't shun them. And I definitely understand the other side of the coin. I understand that the people saying the hurtful things towards me or towards Christians are not necessarily the majority. And I know that there are Christians that say hurtful things towards other people. And I hope the other people understand that they're not necessarily the majority either. But yes, we're dominantly Christian, but I think more and more, actually, we touched on this a little in our correspondence as well. When I was a boy, everyone was Christian. I mean, it was just, and I say everyone, I'm sure there were people that weren't, but like you're saying, they kept it quiet. Mm-hmm. And as time has gone by, even in my rural area, it's less and less. You're getting people that are more vocal about their atheism, and that's fine. They're not, you know, in this real world area, you know, not the internet, but where people are having real life physical interactions, everyone's pretty cordial to each other. But that's not surprising, considering when things get out of hand in real life, think bad things can happen. And I'm not saying that Christianity should be, everyone should be Christian. I hope everyone would be, but I'm
because
not
you don't
saying
want
that
them,
it's a,
because you don't want them
right.
to go to hell, clearly.
Yeah. I'm not just trying to pad my numbers or anything. It's literally about looking out for what I believe is the best for these people. And if it's okay with you, I'll give an example that a lot of people have probably heard before, but it's kind of an analogy where if you see somebody walking toward a cliff, you think that cliff is there. You think that cliff is a danger to them. You're going to try to stop them. That's kind of how it is for Christians. We believe that danger is there for these people, and we need to try to stop them. Now, if that person doesn't want to listen to what we have to say, if they don't want to choose to become a Christian, that's their choice. And I believe we should say, okay, you know, you've made your choice. That's fine. Now, we're still friends with them. We're still, they're still our loved ones. We treat them just as we would treat anybody else. But I think that's why the majority of Christians do share their faith and try to convert people, is because we don't want bad things to happen to them.
Well, that makes complete, absolute sense. I mean, the example is, I'm sure, used very often, but it makes sense, as I was saying. This is, you know, something that is interesting to me and not difficult to understand, but as I often mention, in France, there are, you know, many Christian, I'm sure France is dominantly a Christian country, but the secularism of society is deeply ingrained, as we discussed in detail in the last episode about burkinis, and, you know, go listen to that. I go into many details about that, but there has never really been, for some reason, the Christians in France, I don't know how different their faith is. I guess they are in a place where I'm sure many Americans are as well. They define themselves as Christians, but they don't necessarily go with all of the the written Bible. And for example, they might not think that you do need to be a Christian to be saved from sin and to go to heaven. You know, maybe they have a wider view of it, which I also have a problem with, because it's kind of, well, now you're starting to pick and choose. But they think, you know, if you're a good person, then you go to heaven. And maybe that explains why they're not rushing to save you from walking into that cliff as much as maybe some people in your community would be. But
sure.
Yeah. So I'm sort of heartened by the description you're making of the people of your community who, from where I'm standing, have a pretty strict view of Christianity. I think most people would agree to that. And yet, someone who would not believe in God wouldn't necessarily be shunned, as I have been led to believe people are in those situations. You're saying, at least in your experience, that's not the case.
In my experience, in a community type capacity. Now, that you said that person said they couldn't tell their parents, that might very well be true. I imagine in this scenario you gave, where one of my children came back from college, they would struggle to tell me. And I know that's true. They would not want to tell me. And it might be more of a disappointment thing. They don't want to cause that disappointment. I would hope that they wouldn't think that I would shun them. But definitely in a community sense, no, they're not going to be shunned. Now, in that small group setting of family, or, you know, they've gone to a church all their life and now they've decided they don't believe, those church members, they might have a different viewpoint than I do, but everyone's different, and a lot of people are going to take things a little differently. So
The reason I was bringing this up wasn't just for the theoretical question. It was also because, to me, it sort of explains the pushback, you know, the aggressivity. Without excusing it, I think the reality is, as often, you know, when we talk about the internet, is that we're going to be more aggressive on the internet and say things that we wouldn't say in real life. But the pushback, the violence of the pushback towards Christianity, which I can absolutely believe is real, is at least in part due to the what feels like a obligation that you are very difficult to get out of, right? If you've been raised in a majority Christian community or country, even when people, after a couple centuries, in the case of the U.S., finally managed to you know, get out of that community and feel some kind of oppression, I can understand that they push back, right? And you're saying that in your experience, it's not the case, which is awesome, and I hope it's that easy. You make it sound very easy, which is great, and again, makes me rethink my assumptions about this. But for some people, it isn't, and that would be the reason why they push back hard. Does that make sense, or is that, you know, an idea in my head?
I think it makes sense, but I also think another part of the pushback against Christianity is definitely our beliefs. We believe things that other people just don't believe, and that makes people angry. So I think it's a little bit of both.
So, I mean, if when you're talking about Space Daddy, this is basically the entirety of the you know, all three big monotheistic religions believe that. So
right,
it's not specifically against Christians. It's about, you know, monotheistic religions. And I'm sure the people who would say things like Space Daddy don't have a particular fondness for other religions either. But you think it's, I guess my question is, don't you think it's targeting Christianity? Ooh.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
No problem. Maybe someone's calling to tell me I'm wrong about something.
No, I just hung up on them, so we're good.
Oh, okay. Please apologize to them for me later when they call back.
I don't know if you have telemarketers, but we do, and that's who it was.
Okay. All right. Then definitely do not apologize. So, yeah, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, you feel it's an attack on Christianity, and I understand that, but the way I look at it, it's just an attack on religion, and Christianity happens to be the target of it because it's the one that's in front of them, right?
It could be just a general attack on religion, and it's because Christianity is in front of them. It could be that I am taking it personally because I'm a Christian. I'm perfectly willing to admit that. I do see more, at least in the United States, I see more of an anti-Christian sentiment than other religions. And that's not just on the internet. That's just in general society these days, and our government to some extent. And I don't want to maybe necessarily get into government type stuff, but
keep going. And after that, I'll have a question.
Okay. So you don't see the pushback from media and elected officials quite as much towards Islam, except for in the instance of the terrorist attacks and things of that nature. You just don't see pushback against now. And I do want to make it clear, I'm talking the media and the elected officials. You see a lot of pushback from the general populace. And again, I don't condone mockery in that instance to anything, but go ahead, please.
So what this makes me think about, and again, maybe it's because I'm looking at it from France, but to me, the American, political system is entirely Christian. You know, and it's the pushback you're seeing against Christianity is because, and not against Islam, is because there are no elected officials that are of another religion. Or I'm sure there are a couple, but most of them are Christians. And you couldn't imagine in 1,000 years, well, maybe in 1,000 years, but, in the next few decades, a president that wouldn't be a Christian. In your country. And as I'm sure you couldn't imagine a president that wouldn't be a Muslim in many other countries, or a Christian in many other countries as well. But sure. I'm surprised that you feel there is a pushback when, from where I'm standing, there's a dominance of Christianity in the American political system. That's not the way you see it?
My response, without trying to put on my crazy far right hat, would be, are they Christians? Because as time has gone by, our country, the rules and the policies have gotten increasingly anti-Christian as time has passed.
So can you define go ahead.
Well, they say they're Christians. They go to church on Sundays and so on. But the policies that they're putting forth are not Christian policies.
So what you're referring to things like the right to choose and things like that, or deeper than that? Okay.
Absolutely.
Right. So what you're saying is, well, so what I'm trying to analyze what you're saying, but I know that, as you mentioned as well, there are different types of Christians in the country and in the world. And when I say different types, what I really mean is different faiths. And when you're saying they are not Christians, you're understanding it to mean the type of Christian faith that you believe in yourself. Is that correct? Or that, no?
No, I wouldn't say that. I would say that things like, and I understand and I respect the separation of church and state. I do. But as we have gone through the last few decades, we have not only stopped required prayer in school, which I'm actually not completely against that. I think that you shouldn't require someone to pray that's not their religion. I'm completely okay with that. But we've gone from that to saying you can't pray in a public school or public meeting or something like that. And I actually have an example of this. There's a local school in my area, and they had a wrestling team. And it just so happened that all of these wrestlers were Christians, and they wanted to get shirts with, they wanted to use a Bible verse on their wrestling shirt. I think it was, "I can do all things through Christ." And it wasn't even local officials that put a stop to it. Some separation of church and state group from Minnesota found out about it and came in and filed lawsuits to get them to take that off their shirt. So that kind of thing, the right to choose, as you said, that has, those to me aren't denominational things, which I think is what you're referring to when you were talking about one Christian faith versus another Christian faith.
Right. Yeah. Those are, I guess that was it. Yeah.
And that's fine. Those are tenets of Christianity as a whole, you know, protecting life and the verse and prayer and things like that. So that's why I say that the policies that our government has set forth over the last few decades have gone farther from the biblical policy, the biblical founding that we had. Now you could debate whether our founding fathers were Christians or not. I know there are some that say they weren't, but they did found this country with that. And so I think that that's why I say, are they really Christian? I'm not so sure.
So you, just to take the extreme example, and I don't want to, you know, make all of this about the right to choose, but it's the one that speaks the most clearly if you, we want to explain your thinking here. Do you believe that someone can be a Christian and be pro-choice?
I believe they can be a Christian and be pro-choice. I believe they are wrong, and I believe that eventually they will be shown the error of their ways, you know, in some sort of final judgment.
Okay, but in the case of, you know, we're talking about these, you know, the elected officials, and again, I'm hope this is clear. I'm really not trying to probe you aggressively. I'm just trying to understand where you're coming from. These elected officials that you're wondering whether or not they're quote unquote real Christians, if they actually have the basic beliefs of Christianity, maybe they could you imagine them to be Christians that actually believe in the right to choose, that are pro-life, or is that difficult to reconcile for you?
It's very difficult for me to reconcile, but not even, I don't think you want to make this a discussion about pro-life versus pro-choice, but it's not even difficult for me to reconcile because of my Christianity. To me, it's difficult to reconcile just because it's difficult for me to reconcile, just for my mindset, my personality. You know, I believe that, like I said, I believe they're incorrect, could be misguided, could be knowingly incorrect. I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking, and that's always an issue. You don't know what someone's thinking. They could just be wrong. They might think they're on the right path and they're not, you know, that kind of thing. But it is very difficult for me to reconcile how someone who claims to be a Christian could be pro-choice.
Okay. So in that, it's in that sense, that you feel Christianity is being, targeted or attacked. And it shows in the comments on the internet, but it's sort of a symptom of a wider issue that your country is living through right now, right?
It is. I think our country is very divided, obviously. I mean, if you look at any of the, we're extremely divided. And I feel like there are actually, and it's not necessarily geographical, although there are some instances where it is. I feel like we're two countries at this point. We're a conservative Christian country, and we're a liberal, you know, non-religious country. And that's tough. And I think that's probably a symptom of how big our country is. You know, we've got so many people, so large of a space, that you're going to have these different ideologies all throughout, and it, very divided, and it's very divisive, and it's toxic how divisive we are towards each other. And it's a shame. I hate it.
You know, I hear what you're saying, and I think there's a lot of truth to it, in the sense that this division, I feel, is incredibly strong, but it's incredibly strong not because it's real. It feels to me like it serves a political purpose to have an enemy, and in possibly in both camps. Obviously, we're talking about, you know, Republicans and Democrats here at this point, or maybe you wouldn't be comfortable with some of the Republican Party. I'm guessing, is that correct, or do you make that distinction between Republicans and Democrats, or is it an entirely different thing altogether?
I am a registered Republican, but I would vote for anyone as long as their ideals aligned with mine.
Right. And your focus is on the Christian principles, I'm guessing.
Yes.
So
yes,
anyone, sir. let's say a Democrat would come in and say, "Listen, I'm socially liberal, but there are a couple of things that I'm are important to me as a person and for my faith, and that's the pro-life. I'm pro-life and whatever. I'm pro-life and but I want Medicare and Medicaid to be expanded. And Obamacare is amazing, and we want it more." You would vote for that person?
Well, you sure kept piling on there, didn't you? Yes, I would. To me, the issues, the pro-life issue is paramount. As far as an elected official, that would be the one that I would put at the very top of my list. And that's just because it's something that I feel very deeply about.
Okay. But yeah, no, that's interesting, because it shows to me that this is really about a couple of very specific issues. And it seems, the way I look at the political landscape in the US is that in the past 20 years or so, maybe 25 years, maybe it was the same before. Maybe it's just since I started, you know, being old enough to understand it. But it seems to me that this opposition has been drummed up to a point that it seems that we are in this situation that you're describing, where it's basically two groups with guns pointed at each other. And this is not a joke about the Second Amendment. It's just an image. But, you know, it seems that way. But I really think that when you take the time to talk to people, like we are taking the time to talk now, and, you know, I'm French. I'm from almost a different planet from most Americans. But it seems to me that we definitely disagree. There is no question about that. I think, you know, we are in those ways in complete disagreement. But I don't hear what you're saying and think that person is, you know, a terrible human being. I'm not thinking what I sometimes think about some of the people I hear discussing things online or I watch on TV, or I'm sure, you know, that you and your family see on TV from the other side and think, how can that human being exist and say the things they do? I'm just thinking, well, you know, that guy comes from a different background. He has different beliefs. He seems like a decent guy. I could hang out. We could hang out together. I would never think that about most of the people I read from online, right? I have this distorted image. And so I'm going on and on. I'm sorry, but I'm wondering if you, how you feel about that division. Is it really something that you feel is so strong because it is? Or is there, as I'm saying, maybe something of a dramatization because of the media landscape that we live in and the world we live in that just presents things that way?
I do think it's a dramatization. I think that if you actually boiled it down and you actually got people to tell the truth, their views on a lot of things would be very similar. And got, you know, took the showmanship out of it, because there's a lot of that. You know, they have to posture for their party. I think that, you know, random Republican senator and random Democrat senator are probably very nearly the same guy or girl or lady. especially once they get to Washington, they're going to the same places to eat. They're going to the same theaters, and they think the same things. Now, there might be a few topics that they differ on, and that's really the challenge, I think, to the American voters, is find your issue or your set of issues, however, you know, find the importance level to you and find the one that most aligns with that. Trust that they're telling you the truth, because they may or may not be, and then make your decision. You know, I said I'm a Republican, but that means very little to me. If a Democrat came out, like you said, and his ideas aligned with mine, I'd have no problem voting for him. Mm. Because I consider the economic stuff, like, and that secondary to the ethical stuff.
But you know, it's, I mean, that's what matters to you, and clearly it's an important way of looking at it. But what you're saying earlier, what you were saying earlier, echoes with me quite a bit. Most of the politicians today agree on most things, and the reason it feels like they don't is that they do, we focus on the differences, and in some cases in a pretty dramatic fashion, like in the case of the right to choose. But, you know, I was looking at the presidential debates and the promos to the presidential debates, and I was saying I'm from a different planet. I really felt like I was from a different planet when I was looking at this, I don't even know how to call it, prize fight intro sequence. Is that, you know, is that normal? Is that how you think of political confrontation of ideas? And I understand that this election is peculiar and is weird and icky for many people, but is that how you think of political debate? Like some kind of a cheap Sunday night, you know, boxing match?
It's not how I think of it. But
right,
I
was using the
U
as
right?
the general, not you specifically. But
well, you know, that's I would put that upon the media that has created those promos. You know, they're the ones setting these things up. So that must be how they think about it.
Mm. Yeah, that's actually the most depressing thing I've heard for at least a couple of days. Not the debate itself, but that is, in my opinion, why you get ultimately, I mean, it's part of an entire system, but that's why you, and now I'm using the direct you to you, Tony, you feel that your country is two countries, because this divisions that exist, I'm not saying they don't, but these divisions that exist are artificially, theatrically emphasized to the point that you feel the person who has a different idea from you is the enemy. And that's deeply depressing. I don't know, you know, I don't want to.
And you know why? You know why they're doing that? Because conflict sells.
Of course, yeah. Obviously,
it's all about
they want,
money.
You know, it's the ratings and you want people to watch and you want. And even beyond that, I mean, we're sort of, you know, stating the obvious here, even for the political, for the elections themselves. And I'm not just talking about the presidential election, you know. If you have a senator or a congressman that's campaigning, if they want you to vote for them instead of the other person, then the division is the best way to do it. I'm for this and they're for that and they're, yeah. I mean, it's one thing if they say I'm for this and they're for that. We're all, you know, great people, but decide for who you want to vote. And it's a different thing if they're saying they are evil, and if you vote for them, the world will go out in flames. How does it
crooked.
Work? I'm sorry?
Crooked.
Yeah,
if
for
you
example.
Will.
How does it go on the local level for a community like yours, you know, for mayoral elections or congressional or, you know, these kinds of things? Is it as divisive as it is for the presidential election?
Not in my community, absolutely not. It might be in
right.
A,
I guess in
a
your
New
community,
York City,
everyone votes
something like that.
Everyone votes the same way in your community. Is that is there are there debates when things?
I have know? Not seen local debates in my community, but at the
I mean,
same
between
time
the people
you're talking.
When you, yeah, no, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say at the same time you're talking. Everyone's just voting for their buddy. You know, half the people are friends with that guy and half the people are friends with that one. So the one with more friends wins. It's not usually, especially at the very local level, it's not about policy. It's about who knows who and who's buddies with who.
And what happens when a buddy of that person and a buddy of the other person, you know, discuss policy? Do you get into heated discussions or?
Nah. Now you might get into a heated debate over a Trump supporter versus a Clinton supporter at the local level. I certainly get into a debate there, but not for the local level politicians, no.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I want to go back. We're going to bring the show to a close fairly soon, but I want to go back to the online issue. And we talked about comments and Twitter and things like that, but you also mentioned, you know, your interactions in online games. Have you ever been confronted with things like that that were problematic for you in gaming in general?
No. The only experience I can ever remember of having a negative experience due to my religion in an online game was actually a guild experience. And the guy and I are really good friends, but he was spouting off in voice chat over some bad experience he'd had with a Christian. And it made me angry. So I left. And that was just it. I didn't leave the guild. I just left the situation. So right. Rather than get into it with him.
You didn't want to say, hey, man, I'm a Christian and I'm cool, so don't badmouth all of us, or you didn't get into that?
I didn't, because he was well aware that I was a Christian. He knew me. We'd met in person, and we'd been playing for quite a while, so he knew that. He didn't need me to remind him of that, and I believe, if I remember correctly, when I left, someone else said something, you know, so it was kind of like, you know, hey, man, chill out. Don't forget Tony's a Christian kind of thing. And it all worked out. We're still friends.
Okay. All right. Well, that's reassuring, I suppose. All right. Anything else you want to mention about, you know, your online interactions and or any other type of interaction or anything?
I think we've covered a lot. I actually was a little worried that we would have a very short show, and turns out we went for an hour and a half. So I'm very pleased. You've actually made me reevaluate the online part. You know, I discussing it has actually helped. I understand that it's the natural meanness of the anonymity of the internet, and I knew that, but you've helped put some perspective on everyone's getting that a little bit. You know, other faiths are getting that, so it's helped me a lot. Thanks.
Well, no, I'm super happy if I've helped in that regard. It's certainly the case that, you know, in my experience, I think, you know, it's not just everyone's mean on the internet. That's a generalization, but it kind of is true to an extent. But in these kinds of debates, I mean, I've seen one of the controversies I've followed very, very closely was the Gamergate issue with the whole issue of the representation of females in video games, and what felt like a conversation that should have been maybe with disagreements, but certainly didn't call for that kind of toxicity, turned into one of the most toxic things I've ever seen anywhere, with, you know, anger and fighting, and I've seen some of that, and I honestly believe that in many, many cases that happens just because of the configuration of the internet, and we're still as a society learning to deal with it and learning with the, if I'm being honest, I think the inner negativity that some people feel they have to express outwards. I think there are a lot of people that weren't hugged enough when they were little, and they feel like, you know, they it makes them feel better to be mean on the internet. And yeah, I'm sure it does manifest itself towards Christian, towards Muslims for sure, towards women, towards everyone. But if I'm being 200% honest, I'll say one thing and put myself under the bus here for a second. I've realized doing this show and with my interactions online on social networks, I am a lot more aggressive on Twitter or on our Slack channel. A lot of French listeners talk with me. It's all very friendly all the time, but I realize that I let myself go a little bit more when I'm on Twitter than when I'm thinking about what I should say when I'm on a podcast. And in this one, it's the case. It's the case, you know, on more silly things like video games or tech, or when I troll, you know, Apple or Android users or Xbox or PlayStation users, you know, these kinds of things. I can become myself a little bit meaner than I am when I'm very composed on shows like this. So if me, who I consider to be a very gentle and kind and you know, considerate, at least, maybe not gentle and kind, but at least considerate person, can turn into that, maybe it really is just a question of learning how to deal with the internet, not for the people who we encounter, but ourselves, learning how to behave on the internet. And that might take time.
But I understand completely. I was the same way when forums were a thing. I got really aggressive on people on forums, and I don't know why. I, like you, I consider myself a fairly even-keeled person, and man, I went after people. So it's a learning process.
I guess it is. And let's hope that we, all of us, wherever we are from, whatever we believe, will learn faster rather than slower, and we will manage to not be mean on the internet. I think we
definitely
can drink to that. And I mean drink, when I say drink, I don't necessarily mean alcohol. Some people might. Let's be respectful to everyone. All right. Anyway, thank you so much for being on the show, Tony. It was a real pleasure to have you on. And I want to reiterate the fact that I was very glad you agreed to be on the show, because it can be a little bit difficult sometimes to talk about these things. So is there anything you want to let people know? I don't know if you do anything online, or if people want to find you or something like that.
I'm more than willing to accept some conversation on Twitter. I don't use it a ton, definitely not like Patrick level Twitter usage, but I might tweet one or two things every few days. Mostly you'll see me retweeting Heroes of the Storm stuff, maybe a political thing now and then, and maybe some pictures of my kids or a picture of me. Like last night I posted a picture of me doing video at church. So my Twitter is at Tony Staley. And as long as you're going to be civil with me, I would be perfectly happy to get into some conversations.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. My name is Patrick Beja, as you know. I'm Not Patrick on Twitter and on Facebook. You can find this show and a few others on FrenchSpin.com. The next episode will be a normal episode where we get different people from around the world to discuss the news, and I'm sure we'll talk about the election at that point in a little bit longer. And when I say the election, I mean the American election, of course, but also other topics. We're not just talking about that. So I hope you listen to that as well. I want to thank everyone for listening. Again, thank you, Tony, for being on, and we'll be back for the next episode. Bye, everyone.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.